Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Keith Phillips and Scott Smith here, joined by our special guest, Robert McLean. Robert, thanks for being with us.
No problem.
And everybody calls you Bobby Mac around here.
Yeah,
so
Bobby
we'll get
Mac,
that out first.
That had to catch on. Tell us the story, how that worked out.
Well, you know, it started in Atlanta with my Twitter name, so I couldn't think of another name besides Bobby Mac. So people, you know, see me on Twitter. And I was with the team. They're like, all right, just call him Bobby Mac for short. So
nice. Now,
last year we had a little thing going where every guy we had on the show, it seemed like for a stretch, had a great game the next Sunday.
Yeah.
But we're kind of doing it in reverse here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we got you right after your big pick six.
I'm gonna be ready for this game.
All right, good.
I prepared well this week. So
That was your first touchdown, though, right?
Yeah, my first NFL career touchdown. It felt good. And that was the first time. You know, I've always had dreams of getting in the end zone in NFL. But, you know, it's a little harder with the accuracy of the quarterback. So the opportunity I was able to have last Sunday just was just amazing.
Can you walk us through the play, how that opportunity came?
You know, 3rd and 8. So, yeah. You know, I really had to get hands on the receiver to help the safety behind me and the coverage we're in. And just feeling the kind of direction the receiver was running,
okay.
I kind of was able to slip underneath it and pick off the ball. So from that point on, I was just, all right, don't get caught and just run in the end zone. So
you know what you're doing, and I'm just watching, but it looked like you got the coverage on him and you turned and the ball was already almost on you.
Yeah, yeah. Like literally, I turned and the ball was like right there.
Yeah.
And I was, my instincts is, protect,
nice.
Protect, like,
self-defense.
Grab the ball. We catch the ball so much in practice, so it's instincts almost.
You talked about being in Atlanta. Was the presence of Dirk Cutter and Mike Smith one of the reasons why you wanted to come here?
Yeah, I had other options also, but, you know, when they gave me the opportunity to come down here and work out, you know, individually to see how well I was moving, and when they signed me, I was excited. You know, there was other opportunities I had that my agent was talking to me about, but when this one came up, I was like, wow, this could be a real good opportunity for me to go in there and compete and already know the system and really get some opportunities to play on the field. So, you know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't like the job was given to me.
Right.
I had to compete for it, and it was great camp.
Javian's a good young player, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did well last year.
Me and Elliot, we're great friends, and I talk to him all the time. You know, we both play one of the hardest positions in the game.
Yeah.
And I talk to him all the time about, you know, what this receiver does or what I see and what he sees and whatnot. So we help each other out a lot.
You know he's going to play at some point this season.
All
you guys are.
It's like that. It's like the NFL. You know, guys get hurt.
Yeah.
It's a tough game what we do on Sundays, and guys get banged up and hurt. So you got to be ready
at all times. You might be called upon to go to an outside corner spot at some point.
Yeah. Just part of the game, so you got to be ready. Yeah.
And then you knew Brent Grimes pretty well from your time in Carolina as well. So what has it been like to watch him continue to have – such or in Atlanta, what has it been like for you to see how successful he's been in terms of his age and still what he's able to do? And people talking about how he looks like he's, you know, 23-year-old kid sometimes with the way he's still able to out there and run and jump.
Yeah, Grimes is Benjamin Button, so he just like, he just ages reverse. So just watching him out there is like we're back in Atlanta again. You know, we grew up in the same neighborhood in North Philadelphia, which I didn't know until I met him, and it's just fun being with him. You know, he kind of helped me a lot in my 2012 year because, you know, I just got released from Carolina and I was jumping around from team to team and understanding the game better with him and going to his house every Monday to talk football with him and just kind of picking his brain about a lot of stuff. It's like having my, like, older brother again, you know.
Oh, cool.
It's just fun being around him. You know, he simplifies the game, man. It makes it fun.
Now, you've been Atlanta, Carolina. Was it San Diego at the end of last year?
Yeah, Carolina released me last year towards the end and San Diego picked me up.
What's the best defense you've been on in your career?
They're all so different. You know, when I was in Carolina, we had a real strong defense that year. Went to the Super Bowl, and
that's true.
And they're all different. You know, they're all different in their own ways. You know, there's years, you know, guys get a lot of turnovers and have strong defenses. So that's the main thing. If we can get turnovers, we can have a top defense.
And how does this defense that you guys have here compare to some of the others that you've played on, and just how you guys feel like you could really be over the course of this season?
We have a lot of young guys that are buying into what the coaches are telling us to do. And also, there's guys that are just hungry and want to go out there and play well, not just for themselves but for the team. It's just exciting, you know, seeing that young guys are learning things quickly. You know, it wasn't a lot of like, wait, what do I do again on this during training camp? It was the young guys bought on to what the coaches were coaching us.
Here's a good example. That Kendall Beckwith had to move into the middle in that game because Quan got hurt. And I guess, I mean, he was calling the plays for a good portion of that game, right?
You had to
be in the huddle with or on the field with him when he was calling plays. How did he do?
He did great. He's been doing great since, like, May when we first started practice. So it was good having him out there. And just because they rotate us a lot during camp and during practice to make sure that if anybody gets hurt or anything happens during the game, that if a guy has to go in there that's new, he knows how to execute the plays and how to communicate the plays to us. But Kendall being a rookie, it wasn't like he was a rookie out there. Like, even him calling the plays, it wasn't like I was looking at him like, oh, this guy's a rookie. It was like he was like a 8-year or 10-year vet.
He didn't have wide eyes through his face.
No, he was comfortable out there calling the plays, and he made a lot of plays, too.
That's great.
And whenever you come to a new team like this, how familiar are you with some of the guys on the defense? You know, you're not going to be on the field with them at the same time in other teams, but I know probably just by reputation and studying other people you knew. So guys like Gerald and Levante and key pieces of the defense, how familiar were you with them, and then maybe how that – stayed the same or changed once you actually got in here and saw what they were really about?
Yeah, you know, seeing it from the outside, you know, you always respect other defenses, and, you know, being a corner, you look at a lot of other corners and watch how they play and kind of try to simulate or try to learn some things from their game. And, you know, seeing it from the outside before I was with Tampa, you know, I always knew that Tampa had, you know, young linebackers that were fast and good, compete, work hard, very good D-line, very good secondary. And, you know, just seeing that from the outside, I was like, oh, that'd be exciting to be on that defense and be with Coach Smith. And Coach Smith has changed the defense a lot from how it was in Atlanta. Hmm. But it's fun being with a bunch of guys that compete as well as we compete.
Yeah, we should probably talk about the Vikings.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. Yeah.
They got, you know, maybe not the biggest names in the world at receiver, but Adam Thielen's off to a great start. And Stephon Diggs had a good year last year. Pretty good receiving core?
Yeah, they have solid receivers, you know, guys that can catch the ball, and when the ball's in their hands, they can do something with the ball. Okay. We just got to make sure that, you know, we execute the game plan that we have for them. You know, we know that when they catch the ball, they have great hands, that they can make plays after the catch. So, you know, eliminating Yak after the catch and just executing the game plan.
Do they have a specific slot receiver? Guy that you
No, they rotate a lot of guys in that slot. So seven between right. Stephon and Thielen, they rotate a lot of guys in there. So,
gotcha.
And how about for you, whenever you don't know exactly what quarterback is going to play for some of the week preparing, how does that change the way you guys scout and look at stuff, or does it?
It changes a little bit, but other than that, it's just like Coach always tells us, like, we can call one call the whole game, like he always says, and as long as we execute it, we should be fine. Like, but, you know, regardless of who the quarterback is, we have to be able to go out there and execute a game plan. We know they're both different style quarterbacks, you know, Bradford and Keenum. But executing the game plan, it shouldn't matter for us.
Coach said one of the reasons the run defense was so good in the last game is it was getting a crowd to the ball a lot of the time. That's going to be important against Dalvin.
Yeah, you got to swarm, especially with their running back, number 33. He's a very explosive running back, powerful runner, very fast. And we have to make sure we have all 11 helmets over there, you know, hitting him when he does have the ball.
And whenever we have players on the show, we always like to have people get to know him a little bit off the field as well. So if people follow you on social media, they definitely have seen this, but you are an artist.
Yeah.
So for people who haven't seen that, tell them a little bit about how you got into that and what type of art you like doing.
I like doing all types of art. It was really started in fourth grade. Just me just taking small things from classes and just carrying on from there. And it was something I always loved. My uncle went to art school, and it was just fun, you know, something I always enjoyed, and now it's kind of like something that people want, I want to buy this or I want to buy that. But I do all types of, I use all types of mediums, so it's not, I hate sticking to one thing. I kind of transition to paint, acrylic, all types of stuff, so.
Any other types of art, like sculpture or anything? Or is it just paint?
Nah, I can't do sculpting. I suck at sculpting. if I can look at something and draw it, that's I can do that all day. But when it comes to, like, using my hands to build something, unless I have like an IKEA like booklet with me, I'm not gonna be able to do that.
Don't you do shoes?
Say again.
Don't you do shoes?
Yeah, I draw on shoes. That's just drawing on them. So I can do that. I can look at something and draw it. But when it comes to, like, if I have to mold this microphone, it's not happening.
It's not gonna happen. Yeah. That's pretty funny. And is there somewhere that if people did want to see some of your art or even buy some of it, is there somewhere that exists?
Yeah, I have my art website, which is I'm renovating it up a little bit. I'm eventually getting, like, you know, my art on sunglasses and Apple Watch bands. So it's McLeansArt.org, and on my website is all prints of my originals. So I'm kind of saving my originals for our art show for next year.
Ooh, art show.
Yeah. Art show, look at
you
that.
You mean you've already gotten scheduled?
Yeah, I'm trying to – it's in the works. It's in the works. I'm trying to have, like, a major art show in L.A. and one in New York and kind of have, like, a one thing every year for that. So
that
trying to get that started.
That's very
and
cool.
And people, I'm sure, are pretty surprised when they hear an NFL players and artists that people don't tend to associate those two things.
Yeah, they normally don't see the soft side, you know, of my –
they see the pick six
side. They see the pick six and football and hitting and tackling. They don't see the other side.
You gotta have an outlet.
Yeah, you gotta have an outlet. Yeah. You gotta have one.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We still have two more segments coming up. One's getting to your Twitter questions. Send all those in using hashtag BucksLive, and we'll be right back.
I don't know nobody that's gonna let another man walk in their house and take something from them. Don't take that to heart. This is personal to me.
We call this the jungle, man. Yeah. It's our house today, man. Let's be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it in, man.
Be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house. Yeah.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing round throw, hot ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers! Hit the back, drop! It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count, we're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James is going to run to the left of the 10. He throws to the inside, touchdown, Tampa Bay!
Attack, technique, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted at the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite, Casey Phillips, and Scott Smith here. We just had Robert McClain on in the first segment. If you missed it, make sure you go check out Buccaneers.com later when we will post that. Talked a lot about some other teams he's been on, guys on the defense with him, and then even the fact that he's an artist off the field. He's one of those guys that can talk about a lot of different things, been in the league a long time, and knows a lot of stuff about not only this defense and Mike Smith, but a lot of the guys in it.
I think it must have been really exciting to get his first career touchdown. I mean, every defensive back wants to get at least one at some point in his career.
And he's been in the league for, what, like 8 years now?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of times when you're a slot corner, it probably reduces your chances. For one thing, you're not on the field quite as much as your outside corners. But also, most of the time you're covering in the slot, you're more in the middle of the field. And the high percentage of interceptions that are returned for touchdowns are on the sideline.
Right.
And in fact, players are taught if they intercept a pass or pick up a fumble to head to the sideline. So, you know, that's what ended up happening. His guy ran it out, and he was on the sideline, and he made a fantastic play.
Worked out pretty great.
It was going to happen eventually.
Eventually, this was the lucky game. Pretty good way to introduce himself to Buccaneers fans. So looking forward to the Vikings. You talked to him a little bit about some of their offensive weapons, and I think it's just been interesting to think about, obviously, not knowing which quarterback for sure is going to play. Mm-hmm. We have suspicions, but you never really know until it's actually the game day. So which quarterback is going to be and how that might affect what their offense looks like. So what are you leaning towards on either guy of what that will change or affect about their
offense?
Well,
you know, you can look at the numbers and see that they had a very, very good first offensive game against it with Bradford starting. And then when Bradford couldn't go and Case Keenum was in there, the offense didn't do much. But as we pointed out, and as Eric from Minnesota Vikings pointed out to us when we were interviewing him, that first game was against New Orleans defense, which hasn't been good for a long time.
Right.
And the second one was at Pittsburgh, which usually does a very good defense. So it's a little hard to compare those two and say they're definitely better with Bradford. And as all of our players and coaches have pointed out this week, sometimes with almost a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, Case Keenum started two games the last 2 years against us with the Rams and won them both. So nobody – I don't think the game plan really changes much. So I think you just prepare the way you prepare, whichever one it is, you respect, you know.
And I know something you'd asked Eric from the Vikings about was the deep play threats that, you know, the Vikings are leading the league in plays of 20 yards or more. They already have 14 of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy. So what is it about their offense that now is so much more capable of those big plays than it used to be?
Well, it could just be a change in philosophy. I looked at our developing philosophy with Sam Bradford. I looked at some clips from late last year, and there was actually some clips in December of Sam Bradford saying he was frustrated because of the short passing attack. They wanted to take the governor off a little bit and take some bigger shots, and maybe that's just developed. You know, he arrived in Minnesota right before the season, you know, because Teddy Bridgewater got hurt, and they made the trade with Philadelphia. So He set an NFL record with something like 71% completion percentage, and they started out hot, didn't they? Win their first five games last year, or maybe that was a couple years ago. But in any case, I think that was last year. It was the game plan, and it was what they were doing. I guess they thought they were playing to Sam Bradford's strengths, but it could be simply be their philosophy has developed since then, and they had all offseason to work on it now, and they're throwing it downfield. But I think also, as you heard Robert McClain say when he was on here, they've got some the receivers that are good at picking up yards after the catch. So maybe there's just some more design plays to get the ball in their hands quickly with a chance to split the defense.
Okay.
And we'll see. Adam Thielen, whose career just keeps going. I mean, he's a former undrafted guy who only caught like 10 or 20 passes his first few years. Then last year, all of a sudden, he had a 1,000-yard season almost. And this year, he's one of the leading receivers right mm-hmm. now. So he just keeps getting better.
And looking at, obviously, those receivers, Dalvin Cook is going to be a huge factor for us. Looking at our defense and what we've seen so far, just it's only been one game, but obviously a lot of really promising things on the defensive side of things. What are some of those key matchups or parts of the Buccaneers' defense that you think are going to be key to making sure that they don't allow some of those huge plays?
Yeah, well, I think you almost absolutely have to limit Dalvin Cook. It has to start there. And you hear guys say that almost every week, but I think in this case it's particularly true. We can't let them get into a lot of short third downs. We can't give up the long runs that Dalvin's gotten in the first few weeks. If the run defense isn't going to hold them to 20 yards like it did against Chicago. I mean, I suppose it's possible, but that was one of the 10 best in team history, so it's almost certainly not going to happen again. But if you can just keep them from getting big plays and try to keep them from getting 4, 5, 6 yards on first down most of the time, I think that's going to be the key. So, you know, all these – we got a lot of pass rushers that – I know we only had one sack, but we harried – Mike Lennon a lot in the first game. Gerald McCoy hit him 4 times, and I think we moved him around a lot, and that made a big difference. But that was partly because the run was being just stuffed, and so the guys could pin their ears back and go after him, and you need to see that again probably against Minnesota to have success.
That's true. And then looking at the other side of thing, Minnesota's defense, what do you feel like our offense is going to be able to try and exploit in that side of things?
Believe it or not, despite the fact, well, they have 5 Pro Bowlers on defense, including 2 in the secondary, and they've been rightfully considered a good pass defense for a while now, but they've actually given up a number of big plays on defense as well. They've given up, I think, something like 6 passes of 20 or more yards in 2 games, and we didn't hit any of those in the last game. You know, we had a couple that were close. I think this is going to be a game that if it goes well for the Buccaneers, it's going to be because we hit on some big plays on offense. You know, the running game last week was more effective than explosive, really, and on first downs, it was about 50-50 on whether it was a really successful first down play. You run for 1 or 2 yards on first down, and now do you run it again on 2nd and 9, or do you throw twice? If you run for 4 or 5 yards, you got a lot more options on first down. And it wasn't consistently that good in the first game, even though they ended up with 117 yards, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I think some big passing plays, it's kind of maybe the reverse of what we were talking before. Soften them up with the run so you can hit some big pass plays. If we can hit some big pass plays early, maybe that'll soften it up for the run.
Right, and some of those obviously big pass plays people are really hoping to see go to DeSean Jackson.
Right.
That's been something everybody's been waiting to see, and it was just a yard or two away from happening a few times last game. And you also, you know, Chris Godwin and O.J. Howard didn't see tons of targets or, you know, chances to make some mm-hmm. big plays there as well. Those are the 3, you know, big new shiny toys that mm-hmm. everyone's been all excited to see get out there. Do you think this game could be when we start seeing a little bit more of that chemistry get built?
Yeah, and I think it's there already. You know, he just missed Jameis and Deshaun just missed a couple opportunities. One, he just was barely out of bounds. The other one, Jameis had to move a little bit before the throw, so it wasn't right where he wanted to put it. It's going to work out eventually because they were so close. You know they're going to get it from time to time. But let's not couch this as it was a bad debut or in any way for Deshaun. And I wrote about this yesterday. Deshaun's presence has already changed how Mike Evans is being covered. In the Chicago game last year, Mike Evans had one of his smallest stat totals of the year, and coach said anytime we got inside the 10-yard line, they doubled him.
Mm-hmm.
And in this game, we got at the 13, got the ball, they didn't double him, so Jameis was like, okay, we're going to touchdown.
Yeah. And look how that worked.
And that was because
Deshaun was out there. Yeah. All right. We still have one more segment coming up. We're going to get to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll be right back. Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. It's time to get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Our first one comes from Tyson, and we talked about it a little bit, but just in terms of this week, I think he wants to know more of the whole season. He says, do you think O.J. Howard and Chris Godwin will have bigger roles as the season progresses?
Well, O.J. Howard already has a big role. I know he only had three targets and one catch in that game, but he was on the field for about 65% of the snaps, more than any other tight end. I broke it down for something I was writing yesterday, his snaps and what formations he was in, personnel groupings. He had about 8 or 10 snaps where he was the only tight end on the field, but all the rest of them were in some sort of two tight end, or even in some cases, which was probably short yardage, three tight end situations. And so some of them were with Cam Brate, some of them were with Alan Cross, and that was probably Alan playing fullback. Some of them were with Luke Stocker. But we didn't do a single snap in that entire game that was two tight ends or more that did not include O.J. Howard. So he's really the linchpin of that whole group. So mm-hmm. O.J. Howard already has a very big role. Do I think that he's going to get more opportunities to catch the ball? Absolutely. I mean, look at – they trusted him to throw him the ball in the very first play of the entire season.
Yeah.
It got tipped away. Had Danny Trevathan, who was, you know, 5 or 10 yards farther up, not been able to tip that away, that looked like it was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Seam pass, probably a good 20, 25 yards. You're going to find that play is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't worry about that at all. Chris Godwin's a little harder to figure because he's just sort of your – well, for one thing, it looked to me like they like his blocking because there was a lot of run situations when he was in there. And that those three tight end situations I was just talking about, he was usually the one receiver on the field. So they must already like him for that reason, which will get him on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, he's just kind of the guy you use to spell everybody else. So it's a little hard to say exactly how big his role is going to be from week to week. I think by the time the season is over, he will have been important in a couple games and some big moments, but I don't think you're going to see Chris Godwin have more catches than DeSean Jackson or probably even Adam Humphries. I guess it's possible, and of course all of this is barring injury.
Right, of course. Mark says, I know we've covered this before, but people are still asking why white uniforms at home.
People are still asking that? It's because of heat. Yeah, that's it.
That's it? Because of heat? Because obviously the white uniforms
are
a little bit
cooler. Done that through their entire history in September, and even usually in October. It's usually not until November until we start wearing our reds at home. So, yeah, we end up in white jerseys a lot more than most teams because most teams do wear their colored jerseys at home. But that's a conscious decision because if you're wearing white, the other team has to wear their darker jerseys. And that's been the case throughout Buccaneer history.
Mm-hmm.
It totally makes sense. And you also have to decide these things, like in the spring. You have to present the NFL with the list so the other teams know what to prepare for. And so you can't change. If it was, like, unseasonably cold for the Giants game in a week and a half, 9 days, whatever it is, we can't just say, oh, we'll wear a red because it's cold. It's too late.
Yep.
You got to wear the whites.
That's true. Simba says, first he asked if I'm doing the show with Allie and Donovan this year on the radio. And
now, this is a topic we've had before.
This is a topic that we have been asked, which I love.
I know,
feel
it's
like
really cool.
It's very nice that people remember it and wanted to hear it again. Unfortunately, no, that we changed a lot of the radio shows this year. So now all we have is Coach's Show on Fridays, which is today. Shameless plug, if you want to submit questions, the entire show is fan questions.
Oh, wow.
So all the time you want to ask Coach anything, you can just use the hashtag BucksRadio or you can call in.
So your job is just to read questions.
Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty much the easiest thing that I get to do all week. And then Mondays, we do it with a rotating player. So I know I will have Donovan and Allie on.
That's for sure. You should get them both on together.
And that's the plan. Is
okay,
that
cool.
There's going to be a week we're going to get the band back together and have another week like that. So stay tuned for that as well.
Cool.
Then he also asked, how do we like the celebrations so far since that
rule has been
changed?
They've been pretty good. I think they're going to just keep getting more and more creative. I think didn't DeSean and Mike do a little fake uppercut thing?
A little boxing thing.
Yeah, that was obviously prepared.
Yeah,
so that's all right.
Cool.
Jameis and Mike did some kind of little jump in.
Yeah, they had
like
been doing that, I think,
jams.
Last year too. So think that seemed to be acceptable even before the rule change.
I think what we need is for DeSean to score a touchdown. Then we'll find out how good these
are. That is so funny because that's literally what he said at the end. Can't wait to see.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see DJ.
Yeah, I don't think Cam Brate's breaking out some kind of.
I think the Cam spike is still just going to be there no matter what the rule is, which is pretty funny. Okay, so Toby says, besides the game, as a Bucs employee, what's your favorite part about an away game in Minnesota?
Well, what? That's a tough question. I guess it's kind of cool we're staying near the
Mall of America.
Well, I don't know if we're supposed to say we were staying.
Hey, you said
staying.
Near. That can mean a lot of things. The Mall
within,
of America is so big that
you,
that could
within
mean
within the
lot.
Orbit of the Mall of America, yeah. So I've been there before, but it is kind of ridiculous, the scale of that place.
I haven't been, and I'm very excited.
What's your favorite store at the mall? Or one of them.
I don't know, for clothes, I guess it'd be like H&M.
Okay, they'll probably have at least two H&Ms in that place.
Oh, my God.
Because they're so far away from each other. I'm not kidding. They have two. True. The big change you're used to hearing about, there's two or three of them.
That's pretty
funny. There's an amusement park or a roller coaster?
Yeah, roller coaster. Definitely
going to
be doing that.
Like 40 restaurants?
Yeah, I think I'm also just really excited to see the stadium. I mean.
Oh, that's right. New stadium.
Yeah, anytime you get to be there, the opening year of the new stadium.
I'm not. I've never liked playing when we play at Minnesota because they just have so many, you know, Vikings on motorcycles and the big dumb horn. And when I think they have an even bigger horn this time. And it's, I mean, this is all great for them. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure their fans absolutely love it. And it's for their favor. But why would a visiting team like all that stuff?
That's true. Yeah, that's very true.
People, the visiting teams and fans probably don't like our cannons.
I'm sure. I think some of our own people who, like me, get scared.
Yeah, well, you don't know what's coming. They test it like 5 minutes, you know, an hour before the game, and they don't even say fire in the hole or anything.
I could work here 40 years, and I'm still going to
jump every time.
Yep. Brad says, who will benefit most from Rhodes on Evans if that is the matchup this week?
Who will benefit most? That's a kind of I'm not sure how to answer that question. Coach was just talking about that outside, and he said if that's what they do, and again, this is not, as he pointed out, that's not under our control. Mm-hmm. If it's Rhodes fouling Evans, that's because the Vikings decide to do that. If that happens, which I think it's a good chance it will, mm-hmm. Rhodes is their best corner, and he's big. He's a Pro Bowler. That's a great matchup. I mean, those guys are great, but as Coach said, this is no disrespect to Xavier Rhodes, who he thinks is a great quarterback. But he would take Mike Evans against anybody. Right. I don't think Mike Evans benefits from going against Xavier Rhodes. I mean, if it's Xavier Rhodes or an inferior cornerback, he would benefit from going against the inferior cornerback. But he certainly is capable of still producing.
Okay. Paul says, is there a chance we might get more sacks if we didn't rotate the D-line so much? Cutter said, best guys on the field. And then he brings up that Sapp and Rice played almost every down.
Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they played a lot. They did play a high percentage of snaps in that defense. But that's just not the philosophy of Jay Hayes or Mike Smith. They believe in fresh legs. They believe in taking a guy like Noah Spence and making sure he's still fresh in the fourth quarter. If the game is close or if you're ahead, that's when they're throwing a lot in the fourth quarter, and that's when you want to have your pass rushers fresh. I kind of believe her in the rotating idea. And I don't think that applies to Coach saying best guys are on the field. That means, like, if you have two guys battling for the – nickel corner job, the one who played the best is going to get the job.
Right.
But if you have a number of talented pass rushers, I mean, the best ones are still going to get more snaps.
Mm-hmm.
But rotating them doesn't mean that the best guy is being, you know, is not getting enough chance to play. They're
right.
Just keeping them fresh.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on this edition of Buccaneers Insider Live presented by Miller Lite. We're going to be back 75 minutes before kickoff on Sunday, so make sure you tune in then. And also, if you wanted to submit those questions for Coach Cutter's radio show, use that hashtag Bucks Radio. We'll see you on Sunday.